Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
To Shaken and Disturbed, everyone. That cheesy ball of cheese who's pointing at...
The cheesy ball of cheese? Yeah,
keep the thumbs up. Do the thumbs up. There we go. There we go. Don't know why it's doing that for you. It's John Thrasher, and I am Darren Karp. And if you are on our Patreon, thank you so much for being there. And the reason I say that is because John has updated our virtual backgrounds to have a little bit of a...
Spooktacular
vibe. If you will, you've added a pumpkin to mine. Got rid of some of the flowers. Cat tissue, the butt
it's
holder,
still there.
If you will, is still there. So that is obviously never going to go away, even if it's Halloween. But yep. I have a creepier pumpkin than you do.
Well, yeah, I did my background first. My background update. And by the way, if you don't know what we're talking about, you have to be a sussy radish on Patreon to get the video version of our podcast. So go check it out there and you can see our background. But on the on my table, I put did you say selfish? I just realized you said that.
I did. You're like, I did mine first.
Well, rude. I did mine first because rude. I don't know. I just was working on them. And I put a jack-o'-lantern on the table. And then I was like, when I make Darren's, that I was like, it doesn't make sense if she has the exact same pumpkin. That's not realistic. So I gave you the better pumpkin, in my opinion, because not only is yours bigger,
it's creepier. Yeah,
it's creepier. It's bigger. And
now you guys heard it here first. For all of those wondering outside of this podcast, I love interrupting you.
Yeah, I can't.
Who has it bigger and better? It's me.
There you go. It's me. And I'm not contesting that. So there you go.
Although, as we've learned from this podcast, you can change your brake pads, John, because you don't need a penis form or surround.
That's true. You've said that a handful of times. Not sure where we're going with it. The other thing about your pumpkin, though, is that it has light. It has the candle inside of it. Yours is lit up like a regular jack-o'-lantern, whereas mine isn't.
That's true. And but you also have a little bit of a creepier framed spider duck, which...
Yeah.
You know what it is? Because obviously I love ducks, but I hate spiders.
Right.
It's not necessarily having legs that bothers me about spiders. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that they're like hunched legs that bothers me.
I know what you're saying. Like they're always on attack mode or whatever.
Look
look
at the duck. You know what I mean? Like, look at that.
Yeah, you're
That's
not wrong.
Creepy.
Well, for those who don't know, go ahead. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead. You were going
to
say something.
I was going to say, if you haven't listened to our NMR on Patreon, you're going to have no idea what we're talking about here. And so I just have to go off on a tangent for a second and just go out of it. John, what is the name of the horse Beanie Baby?
Derby.
Correct. Thank you.
Yeah. Guys, so you guys need to tune into NMR and Patreon because Darren and
John,
I have a game.
I can name them. Fucking not the new ones. We're not talking about like 2017 Beanie Babies, although maybe you could. We're talking about like the 90s, like late 90s Beanie Babies when people really collected them. John and I both collected them. Yeah. And John, we started playing a game where it's like I just kind of shout out random Beanie Babies. And I gotta say,
descriptions only.
I gotta say, if I yelled out 10, he got eight or nine of them, right?
Usually
like,
nine. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it was like not even, I didn't even need to describe it for you. And so if you haven't listened to this NMR, I highly recommend just because we go down nostalgia lane. I know it's available
really
for patrons, but maybe we'll make it available
eventually
in the public feed. But if you hear me from time to time, just being like Wolf and John saying, you know, Sprocket, you're going to know just our random game that we have infuse now into Shaken and Disturbed.
For whatever reason, I am just completely obsessed and with Beanie Babies, and it's like no time has passed, even though 30 literal years has passed since then.
Yeah.
One last thing though about my background, you know, there is that spider duck hanging in the picture, and That, Darren, is connected to our Halloween spooktacular, The Runes of Transylvania, which is out now. It's a standalone episode. Patreon members got to hear it early, but it's now available on our live feed if you're listening to this episode. And it's a little bit of a different type of thing. It's not a case. We, I wrote up a script, we recorded, we acted, and you're going to have to listen to it to find out what happens. But it's just a little bit spooky, just a little bit silly, and just a little bit throwback. There's a lot of like Easter eggs from Martinis and Murder in there, if you guys were listening at that point. And it's really fun. Yeah, go ahead. You have another Beanie Baby. Go ahead.
I just went on a tangent of the 9 original Beanie Babies.
Oh, I can name them. Yeah.
You can remember the 9?
The first 9
Beanie Babies were unveiled to the world in 1993 at the World Toy Fair in New York. These 9 plush animals later became known as the original 9, which sounds like a true crime story, and ended up taking the world by storm. Can you name the 9, John? And go slow, because I gotta.
Okay, Patty the Platypus.
Which I remember the colors of
beautiful,
Patty the Platypus.
Gorgeous.
Magenta purple with like an orange flipper flopper. Yep.
Live and love.
Just do this. Because I know we have to get to the case.
I know. We need to get to this.
I got to know this.
It's okay. Patty the Platypus, I think, was Peanut the Elephant one of those as well? It might not have been the first one.
Stand by. Peanut the Elephant was not.
Okay. Tabasco?
No.
Well, wait a minute. Yes, one of those red bulls was, but it wasn't Tabasco.
I remember that red bull.
They renamed it Tabasco, and I forget.
One of them was a pig. Can you name the pig?
Oinks. What color is the pig?
Pink, light pink. And then we're gonna have.
Let me get back to that. Chocolate the Moose.
Yep, got that.
There was the white seal, but I'm forgetting its name. Mm-mm. No.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. You might be thinking of the dog.
Black and white dog named Dottie.
No.
See,
this is
hold
we're
on.
Gonna
this
take
can't
this
be
out
right.
Because now we've just gone on a tangent, and now you seem wrong when we're just promoting the NMR. It's just crazy.
I know. Oh, Legs the Frog.
Correct.
Dot was what's the name of the dog?
Spot.
Pinchers, Cubby.
Yes, Cubby's there. Yep, Pinchers is there.
Pinchers. I don't remember the pig's name. And there was a whale and an orca, but I don't remember their names either. Slippery?
The orca whale was Flash.
Oh.
And the other one was Splash.
Splash.
And then you got Legs, you got Spot, and the pig was Squealer.
Squealer. Yeah, those are so old. I didn't have any of those. I might have had Pinchers, but I didn't have those.
Oh my god, we had the chocolate mousse.
We had the moose and Patty were still being made at the time of the height, but they did discontinue some of those other ones. You couldn't buy legs. There was
and
another
when I go
frog
to New York next week. I got my mom's gonna be so happy. I'm gonna go through the Beanie Babies.
Please do. Oh my god, please, I'm gonna cry. There was another frog that came out later called Smoochy or Smoochums or whatever. Yeah. Anyways, guys. Go check out our Halloween spectacular. It's available now. It's highly recommended that you use headphones to get the full experience of the sound design. Like we said, no spoilers yet, but Darren and I invited a special guest to join in on the fun. So go see who that was. Like I
and
said, we wanted to do something.
The sound design is very good. Sorry to interrupt. It is very good. And I think you can listen to this with kids. It's not.
I think you might throw one F-bomb. You throw one F-bomb.
Okay, cursing-wise, yes, maybe for me. But in general, I would say it's probably a PG-13 type of story. But yes, I do throw in one F-bomb. Good call, John.
Oh, one other thing before we keep going. I have to mention something. I can't believe I'm about to say this, but it's time to start thinking about holiday shopping. Yeah. And just like last year, I am right back on my favorite gift website, Uncommon Goods. I was on it last night and already found the perfect gift for a true crime fan. I have many of them, as you might expect. Get this. It's a murder mystery jigsaw puzzle, but it's not what you think. So let me actually just like read the description to you. So begin by reading the story of the incident, then guided by the narrative rather than a visual reference, complete the jigsaw. The finished image provides all the clues you need to decipher whodunit. Is that not the coolest thing you've ever heard of? I just thought it was so amazing. I have a true crime friend of mine who also loves puzzles. I'm getting this for her. I'm just so excited to get it. And the best part is that we now have a code. I'm literally going to be using this code. So if you want to buy this jigsaw puzzle or literally anything else on the site, which is full of really incredible stuff, as a listener of Shaken and Disturbed, you're going to get a discount. So to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/shaken. That's uncommongoods.com/shaken for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. Okay, so now we can get on to this week's show. I cannot wait to get that jigsaw puzzle in the mail. I'm going to have to just buy one for myself, actually. But anyway, let's get into this week's episode now. So on the evening of Wednesday, September 25th, 1996, David and Jody Becker left their home in Northern California for a date night. Their 17-year-old daughter, Casey, was a senior in high school, and their 19-year-old son, Chuck, had recently left for college. And now that their children were older, the couple was enjoying, you know, going out on more date nights as a couple. And this week was dinner at their favorite Mexican restaurant. Well, the two left their home around 7 p.m. while their daughter stayed home alone. Shortly after 10 p.m., Jody and Dave returned home and parked their car outside of their home, which appeared totally normal. At this point, everything looked, you know, par for the course. But once inside, however, they found their home in complete disarray. Their windows were smashed and their objects thrown all over the floor, and Casey was nowhere to be seen. Now, frightened, Dave urged his wife to run to a neighbor's house to call for help. Like, clearly something had happened. Their house was completely destroyed. The sight that met Jody.
I got to be honest. If I'm going through this and something's happened with my partner, I'm not necessarily being like, go outside to a neighbor's house. I'm like, call 911, right?
Yeah, so jump on the phone right away, right?
Me, right. It's a little, I wouldn't want anyone to leave the house, kind of. No. Or I'd want to stay together.
You'd want to be together, I would imagine. Yeah. So that's totally a legit response. I agree. Well, the sight that met Jody outside was a brutal scene that no parent should ever have to witness. The body of her daughter, Casey, was strung up from a large tree in the front lawn.
Holy shit.
Casey had been brutally stabbed to death and her body prominently suspended in full view of the street and neighboring houses. Yeah, it's just
horrible.
Despicable.
That's horrible.
Terrifyingly, Jody and Dave had only been inside their home for less than a few minutes, and there had been no sight of Casey had they parked their car. Her killer had lain in wait for her parents to enter the home before putting Casey's body in the tree. I mean, this is
okay.
Disgusting.
Yeah, that's sadistic, because obviously, like, I guess depending on how the house is, if you're going to drive up, that's something you're going to see. That's not anything sort of hidden. So for them to actually know that, and also, that seems like a feat of strength to be able to kind of, as gruesome as it is, hang someone up in the matter of almost a couple minutes.
Yeah, that it's almost like, how is that even possible?
Yeah.
Well, the police and the paramedics arrived at the scene, and they were able to confirm that Casey had been killed only a few minutes prior to being found, which is scary. As they continued to sweep the crime scene, police made another chilling discovery. The body of Casey's boyfriend, Steve, also found in the back patio. Steve had been tied up and gagged and had died of multiple stab wounds, also with only a few minutes of being found. So these are like really fresh.
I was going to say the killer's right nearby.
Murders, yeah. Well, later that evening, investigators learned that roughly 10 phone calls had been made to the Becker household within only a few minutes of the murders. This was incredibly suspicious, as you can imagine. And the police suspected the numerous phone calls may have been somehow tied to the killings. Now, something to think about.
This is the stretch.
Yeah, this is the late 90s. So tracking phone numbers, connecting them to cell phones and locations, that really wasn't a thing yet in the late 90s. So something.
Neither was like caller ID or anything, really. I mean, yeah, like, really that didn't not come really. Out. Come out till later. I don't remember that from our childhood. So the following day, their small town was obviously abuzz with the news of the young teener's tragic murders. One of the most notable parts of the case was kind of the timing of the crime. This was a small town, and almost exactly a year prior, another high profile murder had taken place. On September
20th. Oh, I just want to jump in here because we had heard so much about all the murders that would happen in like the late 70s in Southern California. So you kind of associate like a serial killer or something like that with Southern, like Sacramento, the Golden State Killer and stuff. But this was Northern California, which is, for all intents and purposes, and Darren, you're a new Californian, so maybe you can weigh in on this even. You know, not that it's necessarily quieter, but it's not the LA, San Diego.
It's more spread out.
Yeah.
It is a little bit. I mean, even where I live, it feels quieter than what you'd think LA would be. You know, LA is like, it's a city, but it's so spread out, and California feels like that way too. So, totally. Like I said, it's a small town, and a year prior, another high profile murder had taken place. Yeah. On September 28th, 1995, a local woman named Maureen was also killed. Her lover, a man named CW, was convicted of her first degree murder and sent to prison. Seems like an open and shut kind of case. Yeah. Maureen's murder was the biggest crime the small town had seen in years, and another double homicide with an almost identical date made this even more uneasy. Okay. Right. Like, granted, I do feel this way sometimes with crimes where people are like, it's connected, you know, at any given point in time, you give sort of the, you know, that old like theories, like you give monkeys kind of a typewriter, eventually they will type out Shakespeare. It's kind of like, you want to find a connection to some things you probably could, right? Like could happen at any time. Yeah. You know?
And there's, you know, you teach a man to fish and there's no I in team, you know, like Ellen once said.
Right. We didn't come this far to come this far.
Yeah, exactly.
It's what I was thinking.
Yeah, totally.
So the crime had garnered national attention. In the years since Maureen's death, a journalist had become the foremost authority on the case. The journalist had covered the aftermath of the crime, CW's trial, and even written a tell-all book about the case, including details of the affair between Maureen and CW, the man who would one day take her life. This sort of feels like Patton Oswalt's wife, who not single-handedly brought down the Golden State Killer, but like...
Kind of. Yeah. But this is what I was just going to say. It's like, leave it to the author, leave it to the journalist, leave it to now the true crime podcaster. It's like, where are the police in a situation like this? Not that they're not always doing what they should be doing, but it's like, there's only so much resources that police can dedicate to one case, you know?
As soon as word broke out about Casey and Steve's deaths, which obviously didn't take long, it's this small town, the journalist arrived to town to cover the most recent killings on the first anniversary of Maureen's death. This caused a major stir within the small town locals, who were also busy discussing the unbelievably tragic events. I can only imagine if social media existed back then.
Oh my God, yeah. Especially like in a small town.
The rumor mill, right. Yeah. The rumor mill. And among them was Maureen's 17-year-old daughter, Whitney. Whitney and Casey were in the same grade at the local high school and had grown up together, as did many of the students in the small town. Whitney and her father, Neil, were already mentally and emotionally bracing themselves to reach the first anniversary of Maureen's death, and the sudden and violent loss of her classmate was extremely rough on the young woman. That's a lot of death
for a
young person's life.
Yeah, definitely.
And as it happened, Neil was scheduled to leave town for a week to attend an international work conference on Thursday the 26th, the day after Casey and Steve's bodies were found. By all accounts, Steve was apprehensive about leaving Whitney alone in such an emotional, fragile state, but his daughter assured him that she'd be all right and encouraged him to go.
Yeah, I mean, the sad reality about this type of stuff is, you know, life does go on. You have to find a way through, you know, that darkness, no matter how deep and heavy it is. Well, in the small hours of Thursday morning, Neil left for the airport before Whitney woke up for school. That afternoon, Whitney returned home from school, planning to meet up with her best friend later in the evening. But while alone in the house, Whitney received a phone call from someone saying that they were going to kill her. Initially, she believed it to be a prank call. I think anybody probably would. But as the conversations progressed, the caller began to make increasingly personal comments about Maureen's murder and upsetting Whitney and leading her to believe that the caller might even be somebody that she knew. And while she was still on the phone with the caller, Whitney was attacked by a large knife-wielding assailant in her home wearing all black with something covering their face. Yeah. Fortunately, Whitney was
now,
able to...
Hold on. Yeah. I know that you guys accused me of wearing all black.
That's true. Could this have been Darren?
I can definitively say this is not me.
How old were you in 1996, just to be sure?
I was eight. Okay.
Well, let's see where the story goes. Anything's possible. That just reminded me, there was this video that we posted where I was telling you about my little cousin who was just way cooler than me. And I forget what I said. It was something like, listen, I'm not a blah, blah, blah. And you were like, well, as far as we know. And I just thought it was so funny the way you put
Maybe I don't know.
Well, anyway, yeah. So she's being attacked in her house now. Unfortunately, she was able to fight off her attacker, evading by barricading herself in a bedroom and calling the police. Now, according to Whitney, the attacker spent several minutes trying to force their way into the bedroom until the police arrived and they fled. As the authorities, and by the way, were the police like, did they not see anything here? Like, what's going on?
Exactly.
As the authorities entered the house, Whitney's boyfriend also arrived at the scene. Whitney and her boyfriend, William, were in the same class and had been dating for over a year, but the trauma of losing her mother in such a violent way had put, as you can expect, an extremely significant strain on their young relationship. I mean, these, you know, they're late teens, but they're still children, you know, in a lot of ways. Well, despite her grief, Whitney and William stayed together into their senior year, and by all accounts, you know, he seemed fairly supportive of her grieving process. Although there were several occasions where he became a little frustrated with her preoccupation with murder. Well, you know, look, when your mom dies and then two people that you know from your school die at a young age. Yeah, that's a lot. Though William had a habit of visiting Whitney late at night, the already frightened girl was shaken and disturbed by his sudden and an unannounced appearance in the midst of her attack. Yeah, that's a little sus in and of
itself. We still don't really know any motive here. I mean, we haven't really gotten any of the research of maybe what this family was in the outside of the fact that they lived in the same town.
Right.
When Maureen was murdered a year ago, we don't really know any motivation of why they're attacking this family kind of so brutally.
Yeah, exactly. Well, as they arrived, police conducted a sweep of the house and yard in an attempt to apprehend the perpetrator. But he was nowhere to be found, but they did locate the plastic mask that he wore during the attack on Whitney. You know, you hear about this from time to time, whatever. It's kind of like cliche to do that, in my opinion. So seeing as William had arrived just moments after the attacker was last seen, police were immediately suspicious that he himself was the caller and that he had simply removed his clothes as they arrived and tried to cover his tracks by pretending to be visiting Whitney. Well, police decided William was the most likely suspect and they arrested him immediately. However, neither the police nor Whitney were able to get in contact with her father, Neil, to inform him of what had happened. Again, no cell phones, no Snapchat, right. No social media. So it's a little more difficult on an international conference to get a hold of, you know, someone that way. But I think it's interesting that the police were like, okay, we have enough circumstantial evidence here that even though Whitney doesn't think that they're like, no, we're going to take him in. He's definitely a suspect at this point.
It is a little, again, the most likely suspect doesn't necessarily mean definitely much. Like not. You'd think they'd want more evidence.
Right.
But okay, I guess this does kind of happen. Now, as you can imagine, Whitney was afraid to stay in her house alone. She called a friend she was supposed to be meeting with that night, Tate, and spent the night at her house. Now, while the girls were in Tate's bedroom later that night, Whitney received another phone to Tate's house line. Tate's house line. The voice on the other end was the same as the one she'd heard just before her attack earlier that evening. I can only imagine what she's thinking. Right. Whitney contacted the police immediately, letting them know her attacker had contacted her. Again, smart. You want to let them know.
Well, also, if William is in police custody, there's something to think about there, though, right?
Exactly. Like, how is that phone call kind of going out unless there's multiple people kind of working this operation.
Right.
Now, police were obviously now able to rule out William as the assailant, as there was no possible way he could have called Whitney from locked in the jail.
Right, exactly.
Although it is interesting, though, because doesn't necessarily mean he didn't do the other stuff.
It just means he
didn't do this one thing.
Well, and how, we don't know for sure that this particular person calling is even real. You know, maybe they heard word about what was happening and was like, you know, trying to
play a sick joke or something, you know, which people unfortunately do. And on Friday the 27th, Whitney and Tate began school like normal. But partway through the day, the town authorities made the decision to close the local schools and send the kids home.
Because, imagine the drama of being in a small town and this happening.
The decision was made due to Casey and Steve's murders, followed by Whitney's attack the very next day. Now, clearly right. someone was on the hunt for young people, and the students would likely be safer at home.
Right.
A full town curfew was instated, and all residents were instructed to be off the streets by 9 p.m. This makes me think of COVID.
It's very much like a COVID lockdown, although the couple of murders...
COVID doesn't affect anyone after 10 p.m.
That's right.
The way COVID works.
That's the way it works. That's the way we heard about it working. Although, you know, I think about this now and I'm like, well, if the other murders were happening in people's houses, maybe the safest place was the school. But okay, this is what the town thought. Again, late 90s, small town California. What can you do, you know?
Agreed. Yeah. Well, suddenly free from school for the foreseeable future, which would have sounded like heaven back in the day.
Right, right.
Tate's boyfriend, Stuart, decided to invite a large group of friends to his house for a party that evening, which is typical of just high school kids.
I remember this happened, you know, speaking of COVID, I was in Maryland when eventually the schools around here started, closing school because of COVID at that time. And I remember some of my friends, younger brothers and sisters, like my nephew and some others, were like, yeah, school's out, let's go have a party. And it's like, well, maybe don't get in groups, but you know, so it was just very similar.
No, I mean, that's, I couldn't agree more. Yeah. And guests young began people. To arrive. I would go to parties. I never hosted parties.
Yeah, same with me. Oh my God, same.
Not a hoster.
No, me
guests either. Began to arrive at Stuart's house at around 8:30. Now, what happened next could only be described as a bloodbath, the likes of which this town had never seen.
Yeah.
Shortly after the party began, Tate announced she was going to get more drinks and never returned. According to witnesses who gave police statements, there were a lot of guests at the house party, and her absence seemed to go unnoticed by most of the kids.
Yeah.
Which is weird because she dated the guy who was hosting the fucking party. That's right.
That is odd. Well, around the same time Tate left, the reporter who had arrived to town and her vehicle was spotted outside of the house by local authorities doing drive-by wellness checks on residents. This is according to the official police report, by the way. Well, authorities later ascertained that the reporter had been made aware of the high school house party and, unbeknownst to the students, had actually sneaked into the residence. This is wild, okay? And planted a hidden camera in the living room.
Whoa.
In the hopes of learning more about the slew of murders. I mean, you know, listen, if you're a journalist, and as we found out, this journalist wrote a book and won a Pulitzer Prize or whatever, you know, you're not gonna stop at anything to get to the bottom of it. And if there's a large group of high schoolers getting together after a couple of murders, I'd probably be stalking that party out too in whatever way that I could legally, you know?
I mean, yeah, you're...
And this is me as a podcaster. Kids. Yeah, kids will be kids. I mean,
kids will be kids.
Yeah. Well, the model she planted was a top-of-the-line CCTV camera that allowed her to view the live feed from a screen inside of her vehicle. Easy to imagine, by the way, nowadays, but that technology wasn't really available in 1996, in mass, at least. Well, the reporter's camera captured Whitney and William leaving the living room together and heading upstairs. Whitney later told police that she and her boyfriend went into a bedroom to find somewhere quiet to talk. After all, the last time they'd been together, she had accused him of trying to kill her, and she wanted to apologize. Now, according to Whitney, partway through the conversation, the same large figure in a black cloak entered the room out of nowhere, wielding what appeared to be another large butcher knife.
Okay, a black cloak.
I know. It's like, what is going on here?
Did they go to the fucking Halloween store to buy the, like, you know, classic, the like, scary killer, fucking thing? Yeah, right.
It's so silly. Well, William tried to fight off the attacker and suffered several stab wounds as Whitney fled for her life. That's what I would do. I would never try to attack somebody back. I'm 9 times out of 10, I'm not winning that, you know?
Probably not.
Yeah.
It depends. I mean, certainly in self-defense, I would. You know, if someone was trying to, like, hold me down, rape me or something like that.
Well,
like,
that I would definitely,
you know,
to,
like, yeah. I would like to think that I would go in and defend my partner. I would like to think that.
I mean, I guess it all.
It's, but, you know.
You always wonder. I mean, I think, you know, everybody's different. Everyone's Even everyone's like,
well, it's the fight or flight response thing.
That's what I was just going
to
say.
I think in those moments, it's so, that's why we try not to judge people, because I think it's so hard to say in that moment when anyone would do. I think morally, we'd all want to say like, we're going to be that person that helps. But in those moments, if you're so scared, you're crippled and you're paralyzed, like, are you to blame? I mean, you can't kind of help your natural, like,
instinct of whatever it might be.
Response.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Well, she ran down the stairs for help, but because remember, there's supposed to be a whole living room full of people partying, but found the living room empty. Okay, unbeknownst to Whitney, almost all the partygoers had left while she was upstairs with her boyfriend. The reason everyone left was because they got word that the body of the high school principal had been discovered strung up on the school football field in a similar manner to the way Casey had been found hanging from the tree in her yard.
Brutal way to go.
So now we can tell that there's definitely a serial killer on the loose in this town, right? The manner of death and the techniques being used here, they're very similar. The students had rushed to the school to see if they could get a glimpse of the crime scene before it was cleaned up. So now it was just Whitney, you know, essentially alone in the house.
Now, yeah, so she's apparently alone in the house, this Whitney girl.
Well, other than this, what's going on upstairs, right?
Well, right. And as she runs through the home and yard looking for anyone to help her, she came upon a grisly sight. The body of her best friend, Tate, wedged halfway out of the sliding garage door's doggy door.
This is wild.
The town coroner later determined that Tate had suffered multiple stab wounds before she ultimately died of a broken spine from being lodged in the door. Do you remember the movie Ghost? Did you remember that movie? Do you remember the bad guy? What's his name? He's in what's the Kerry Wash? Scandal. He's the president in Scandal. Tony, whatever his name is. How he dies with the window crashing in on his body.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of what made it, like, it's so creepy, like a horrible death. So it appeared that Tate's attacker had trapped her in the garage where the two struggled before Tate attempted to escape through the dog door. The attacker had simply waited for the girl to wedge herself into the door, then used a button on the garage wall to open the sliding door, breaking Tate's back as she hit the door frame. Unable to help her friend, Whitney noticed the vehicle parked outside Stewart's home, the van where the reporter had been keeping an eye on the party. Inside the van, Whitney found yet another body. This time it was the body of the reporter's colleague who was sent to be on location, a man named Kenneth Brown. Kenneth had apparently been keeping an eye on the camera feed when he was attacked inside the van. He, too, had suffered multiple stab wounds. This is making me think this is not just one perpetrator, that there's multiple perpetrators.
How can you kill this? How many, can this many people be murdered and it not be a whole group of people, for as far as I'm concerned?
Whitney attempted to lock herself inside the van, but the masked killer had apparently saw her run for the house and was able to chase her down and force his way into the vehicle. Now, according to Whitney, with nowhere to run, she tried to lock herself back inside the house.
Well, before she was able to barricade herself inside, Whitney was approached by two of her classmates who had apparently not left the party. Remember, she assumed everyone had left. The host, Stewart, and another acquaintance named Randy. Now, both Stewart and Randy begged Whitney for help, each swearing that the other was trying to kill them. Unsure of who to trust, the terrified Whitney chose to abandon both of them, locking them both out of the house while she hid inside. Suddenly, Whitney heard a loud thud coming from the stairwell and watched her boyfriend, William, collapse as he tried to crawl down. He had apparently survived the earlier attack. Now, Whitney told authorities that she had rushed to help William, but as she approached him, something about his demeanor seemed weird. William was covered in blood as Whitney scrambled to try to stop his bleeding, but she was unable to find any major stab wounds. Whitney then recalled that William laughed and told her it wasn't blood, it was only corn syrup. Whitney told authorities that at this moment, Stewart, the party host, emerged from seemingly out of nowhere and began to threaten her with a gun. Now, clearly somebody wanted Whitney dead as well. Whitney tells authorities that Stewart and William admitted to Whitney that they were responsible for the recent slew of attacks on their classmates and for the attack on Maureen, Whitney's mom, the previous year. William explained to Whitney that in addition to her affair with the man CW, the man who had been convicted of her murder, Maureen had also been having an affair with William's own father.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Lots of things going on here. So William told Whitney that his mother had learned of his father's infidelity and abandoned the family, not just her unfaithful husband, but her son too. So now that's kind of the motive here you can hear. Jeez, in William.
Yeah, now I get it. Yeah, yeah. I get it now.
Yeah, William wanted revenge on Maureen for breaking up his family, so he enlisted Stuart's help in killing her. The pair now intended to try and pin the murders from the past several days on Whitney. They explained that they were planning to hurt each other and claim that she had attacked them both. It's just really a truly horrific thing unfolding here.
Yeah, and just, I mean, it's like cinematic almost, yeah, in a weird way. Now, Whitney watched in horror as the two young men began to stab each other in non-vital body parts. Okay. However, it seemed that either by accident or on purpose, one of William's lacerations to Stuart's midsection cut too deeply, and Stuart began to bleed out. Both men seemed to be losing lucidity as they continued losing blood. And as Stuart lost consciousness, William turned his attention to Whitney, who once again tried to flee. As William began chasing Whitney through the house, the journalist, whose name is Gail Weathers, entered the home. Gail had returned to her van to find her partner's lifeless body, and in a frantic attempt to find out what happened to him, she had reviewed the CCTV footage from inside the house. The footage showed her exactly what had happened inside, including Stuart and William's explanation of the murders and their plan to frame Whitney. Gail was armed with a pistol, and when she entered the home to find William in pursuit of Whitney, she opened fire on him, shooting him twice in the torso and one in the head. Good for you, girl.
Good for you, Gail.
Good for you. In the ensuing struggle, Stuart tried to grab Whitney and overpower her, but she was able to push him to the floor and knock a television set down onto his body. If I was going to go, maybe I'd go that way.
I mean, that's a lot of people died that way in the late 90s, it seems. You know what I mean?
I guess
giant TVs falling on their heads.
Well, Stuart was later pronounced dead at the scene, and once the two women were safe, they called local authorities and the scene was secured. Officials were able to review the CCTV tapes and use William and Stuart's confessions as evidence to exonerate CW, whose real name is Cotton Weary, and free him from prison for the wrongful conviction of Maureen. Gail Weathers later wrote several best-selling books about the events in the small town of Woodsboro in September of 1996 and eventually won a Pulitzer for her coverage of the case. Yep. Whitney Prescott was extremely traumatized from her ordeal, but with the help of lots of therapy, was able to resume her life and began college the next fall, where she enrolled in a theater program.
Well, that's great.
Unfortunately, this spate of murders was far from the last the little town of Woodsboro would see. We can cover the rest of the murders, obviously, in a future episode, but if you want to know more about the case, you can download the movie Scream by Wes Craven, which was based on these fictional events. Happy Halloween!
Happy Halloween, everybody! That's right. That wasn't Whitney. That was Sydney Prescott.
Sydney, guys. Wow, guys, Whitney,
we gotcha. Guys, we gotcha.
Guys, we got you. And you know what? This is kind of a perfect time before we go to our social plug. I love the background, John.
Yeah, if you're looking on our Sussy Radishes feed, I changed my background to the Scream background.
This basement, minus the pennants in the background and the guitar, remind me of my favorite scary movie of all time, which I believe was Carrie. And the reason that I'm thinking I believe it was Carrie is, did you ever see Carrie?
I remember watching it in high school, and I know, obviously, the iconic scene, but I don't think I really remember it that well.
You know, that iconic scene was the least scary part of the movie for me.
Yeah.
In fact, my brother reminded me of this because Piper Laurie, who plays, I believe that's her name, who plays Carrie's mother, Sissy Spacek's mother in the movie Carrie, unfortunately just passed away this last week. Piper Laurie. And my brother then, he said, oh, damn, Piper Laurie died. And then gave me the an all caps version of what I think is the scariest line in all of scary movies, which is, they're all going to laugh at you. They're all going to laugh at you.
I remember that.
This line,
actually.
And it is embedded in my brain. Dear. They're all going to laugh at you. Oh. And it is, gotta watch Carrie.
I might watch it. You know, I'm not a big scary movie fan, but I think we have to wrap up the story, of course, by asking, of course, what's your favorite scary movie?
Absolutely.
Is it Carrie for you?
Carrie is up there for me. It was the first movie that really, like when I think about being scared as a kid and I'd have to like watch Ren and Stimpy, it was Carrie.
Ren and Stimpy?
Yeah.
What
I have to watch it to like calm down.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I was like, that's not as scary.
No, I'd have to like watch it to like calm down and like be yeah. like, okay, yeah, it's yeah. fine.
Yeah.
And then I think the, even though it's not a scary movie, you know, in Beetlejuice at the end, when Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis are like being mummified in their yes. wedding dresses and then they come yes. back to life.
That is weird. I don't like that. I don't
terrifying
like
terrifying to me as a kid. Terrifying. Just I would say sheer terror.
My favorite scary movie is probably The Shining. But yeah. like The Shining is of course scary, but it's not like
it's like psychologically scary.
It's psychologically though. Scary, and that is fine with me. The type of scary where like Scream, let me tell you something. I hated Scream. It felt so real to me. I lived in the country, kind of similar to that opening sequence.
Courtney Cox, David Arquette.
I mean, it's such a classic. I think now I would be able to watch it and be fine with it. But like back then, that movie really scared
me. No, it was scary. It was definitely scary.
It made you feel like someone was in the house, you know?
And I think after that, when they came out with Not Another Scary Movie, where they sort of make fun of all these scary movies, it made it less scary.
Yeah, that might be true. Yeah. I will say, I remember the scariest movie from when I was a kid, which I'm going to have to watch it back now to see if it's actually scary, but Killer Clowns from Outer Space. You've never seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
I don't think I have.
Let me tell you what happened. Spoiler alert. They're these clown aliens, but they're clowns. Okay. This is like from the late 80s or early 90s. They're people playing clowns in giant, like, you know, suits essentially.
Sure.
And two scenes that I will never forget. Number one, they do like shadow puppets on the wall, but like the shadow puppet like eats a man and like he dies. Terrifying. Look it up. Terrifying. And
it's
then
called Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Yep. Clowns with a K. And the second thing that happened is they had this cotton candy gun that would you would shoot it and it would wrap the person up in cotton candy and it would kill them. And then there'd be these cotton candy cocoons. Oh, the
maybe
cotton.
I have seen this.
The cotton candy cocoons would like hang in their spaceship or whatever. And you would try like. Whoever the heroes were, you know, would kind of like do this like in the cotton candy to like separate it. And inside was just like blood. And I was like, okay, I've had enough here. But it was like, yeah, cotton candy.
It does. Killer it does clowns. Seem so right. Yeah. Now that I'm looking at the images. So you guys got to let us know what your favorite.
And I will. Yeah. And I will say, let us know what your favorite scary movie is in the comments on Facebook or Patreon. One last thing on this. Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights. I don't know if they've always had this, but they had the killer clowns walking around on the grounds. And I remember seeing it for the first time. I think it was like last year was the first time I saw it. And I was like, no, this is my favorite scary movie that I don't like, actually. So anyways, guys, we hope you like the story. Good. We thought we'd change it up a little bit just for the fun of it all. And we have to give a huge shout out to Megan for taking this and running with it. She did all of the quote unquote research. So thank you, Megan, for handling that. And Darren, let's get into
it. It was
some
so hard not to say Gail. And like,
I will say this.
It's so hard.
What you guys know is we did have to edit a couple moments where we both
were like,
started laughing
by a tree.
Well, we were laughing at each other trying to tell this classic story. And yeah, so there's some moments that got edited out. It was tough. It was a tough one. Anyway, let us know what you thought about it. Do you love Scream? Let us know. Jay Thrasher, Carpe Darren. You can hit us up on the Facebook group or on Patreon. Darren, let's do some listener shout outs.
Yeah, Sarah on Patreon commented on the Halloween Spooktacular and said, loved it, super creative, and appreciate some of the martinis and murder Easter eggs.
That's right.
I'm glad you picked up on that, Sarah. Thank you so much for listening. And yeah, it was really, really fun to do. And John was the genius behind it, but thank you so much for listening to it. It was great.
Yeah, I love that. Denise, of course, our friend of the show and one-time co-host of the show, actually, also posted in our Facebook group, Darren. She listened to last week's Mercy Brown vampire episode and had a stunning realization. She said, quote, okay, you guys are not going to believe this. No, I mean, really not going to believe this. Just listen to the Mercy Brown episode. Mind you, I'm from Rhode Island. So I Google where the cemetery is that Mercy Brown is buried. It just happens that she's buried on a cemetery that I pass every single day to go to work. So, of course, I had to stop in on my way home and check it out. And Denise posted a photo and a video of Mercy's tombstone our Facebook group. So I thought that was so cool. Thank you for sharing that with us, Denise. I actually marked it as like a pinned announcement in our Facebook group so everyone can go and check that out for a little while. So thank you, Denise.
Yeah,
Denise
is
amazing. She's just the way she's contributed to the show after all these years. It's pretty amazing.
I know. She's like, it warms my heart to feel that we have like these friends who we can't really like hang out with all the time, but it feels really good to have you guys.
Absolutely.
It's just so fun. If you're wondering how to support the show like Denise and keep these episodes coming along, please consider joining Patreon. We have tons of exclusive videos and episodes that are not released to the public. We have some Beanie Baby naming games that only the patrons get. And last week, Patreon subscribers got to hear the Halloween episode a few days early. It's really great if you're a big fan of the show and want to help us keep it going. That's patreon.com/shakenanddisturbed. It's also in our show notes. We appreciate any and all support.
That's right. All right. Well, everybody have a wonderful week. I think this coming weekend will be Halloween weekend, if I'm getting that correctly. So, you know, have a scream, if you will, and check your freshies.
Remember, check your brake pads without pants. Apparently you don't need a penis.
All right. There you go.
Even John could do it.
Apparently. All right. We'll see you guys next time. Bye.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.